content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, friends. This is Larry Wilson for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you articles of interest from Money.com. Our first article, Congress is gearing up for a fight over Trump's tax cuts. Once the fanfare of Donald Trump's inauguration fades, Congress has to get to work on taxes, and it won't be pretty. At issue is the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017, which was a hallmark of Trump's first term. Abbreviated TCJA, the law made sweeping changes to the U.S. tax code that slashed the average person's income taxes by about $1,600 in 2018, but benefited wealthy households the most. Several key provisions in the TCJA expire at the end of 2025, leading Trump and the Republican Party to vow during their campaigns last fall to make the changes permanent if elected. The GOP platform specifically said it wanted to cement the policies that doubled the standard deduction, expanded the child tax credit, and spurred economic growth. That's in addition to nixing taxes on tips and pursuing other cuts. Now the election is in the rearview mirror, and the TCJA's number one fan is back in the Oval Office. Republicans have a majority in the House and Senate, but both margins are very narrow, leaving little room for defectors. In order for his tax cuts to pass as intended, Trump needs every single vote he can get. So what happens next? There's no easy answer to that question, but the drama has already begun. On January the 5th, the president-elect posted on Truth Social that members of Congress are getting to work on one powerful bill that touches on border security, American energy, and renewing his tax cuts, rather than tackling each topic separately, as previously thought. Republicans must unite and quickly deliver these historic victories for the American people, he wrote. Get smart, tough, and send the bill to my desk to sign as soon as possible. Although everything Trump says should be taken with a grain of salt, he also claimed in his post that his 2017 tax cuts were the largest in history, which is not true. His stance will guide the legislative agenda in the near future. Experts say his signature confidence, however, might be overblown. I don't think you can take for granted that if the president says he wants a certain thing done, it's going to be done that way when you have such a thin margin, Bob Diaz, National Director of Tax Research at Bernstein Private Wealth Management, says. Well, what's at stake? Even if you're not a politics junkie, it's worth keeping an eye on the Trump tax debate because of its potential impact on your wallet. For example, one of the expiring TCJA provisions is the increase to the standard deduction, which is claimed by 90% of taxpayers. According to the Brookings Institution, the standard deduction for a married couple filing jointly will be $16,525 in 2026 if the policy isn't extended. If it is, their standard deduction will be about $30,725. Individual income tax rates may be affected, too. The TCJA slashed the top marginal tax rate to 37%. If this rule expires, it could rebound to its previous level of 39.6%, according to the Tax Foundation. Keep in mind that it's unlikely the TCJA will be extended in its entirety, says Jim Bertels, head of wealth management and planning at ALTI Tiedemann Global. The Trump administration and the Republican Party have been saying for some time they want to, quote, unquote, reduce taxes, and that translates into, if they can get away with it, extending the TCJA, he says. Not all provisions of the TCJA, if they're extended, are favorable to taxpayers. Bertel says the cheapest, most consumer-friendly policies are probably the lowest-hanging fruit, but those perks aren't even across the board. An analysis published by the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy found that Trump's tax proposals would cut taxes for the wealthiest 5% of Americans and raise them for other income groups. The Tax Foundation, for its part, has estimated that 62% of filers would see their taxes go up if the TCJA expires. How to pay for it? Diaz says the price tag associated with the TCJA is controversial and an issue that's likely to prolong the discussion on Capitol Hill. It's not going to be cheap. Last May, the Congressional Budget Office said extending the expiring individual income tax provisions for another decade would add $3.3 trillion to the national deficit. The president-elect has repeatedly hyped up his plan to enact tariffs or taxes on imported goods on countries like Mexico and China as a way to pay for the tax changes, as well as create U.S. manufacturing jobs and slash the national deficit. But that may have real consequences to consumers, Diaz says. Many economists have raised alarm that companies may raise their prices in order to cope with tariffs hitting the pocketbooks of everyday Americans. Some executives, like the CEO of AutoZone, have explicitly said as much. The Peterson Institute for International Economics reported in August that the Trump tariffs would cost the average U.S. household over $2,600 annually. There's not necessarily entire consensus on that, but there is a risk that prices increase as a result of these tariffs, Diaz said. For a president obsessed with public opinion and who partially campaigned on lowering prices, that may be a tough pill to swallow. The same could be true for some of the lawmakers Trump needs on board to pass TCJA 2.0, not all of whom agree with the idea of using tariffs to generate revenue. One question that looms larger than the rest is when exactly this may get done. House Speaker Mike Johnson told Fox News he wants to get the one big, beautiful bill passed within the first 100 days of Trump's presidency, because we'll begin to see the effects of the economy very quickly, and that will be important for the midterm elections in 2 years. But having the 2025 debate wrapped up by May might be ambitious, Diaz says. Given the tight margin and wide variety of opinions, he says, it'll be tough to get everybody on board in just a matter of weeks. There's just a lot of pieces up in the air, Diaz says. While any legislation is all but certain to face opposition from the Democrats, there's disagreement even among Republicans about how to address the deduction for state and local taxes, or SALT, that's S-A-L-T is the acronym, and the single bill approach. It took us months to do the first tax cuts bill 9 years ago, Andy Harris, Republican from Maryland, told Fox News earlier this month. The bottom line is, if that's what the president wants, he's going to have to wait until the summer to get it all ironed out. Consumers should remember that whatever the end result is won't be permanent, Diaz says. It's smart to be prepared regardless, though. Bertels likes to view the uncertainty as an opportunity. So far, his approach has been to say, let's plan as if these tax law changes are favorable to you, and then let's put enough flexibility in the documents so that if they don't change, you're still protected. Our next article, small change. What happened when other countries got rid of their pennies? This article by Martha White appeared in Money.com. Talk about a memorable coin toss? No, not the one at the Super Bowl. On Sunday night, President Trump announced on his Truth Social network his newest target for elimination, the penny. Far too long, the United States has minted pennies, which literally cost us more than 2 cents. This is so wasteful, he wrote on Sunday night. I have instructed my Secretary of the U.S. Treasury to stop producing new pennies. Let's rip the waste out of our great nation's budget, even if it's a penny at a time. The Department of Government Efficiency, helmed by Elon Musk, posted a similar sentiment last month on X, noting that the cost of producing each penny far outweighs its value, a conundrum called negative synergy. The U.S. Mint produces billions of pennies each year, more than $3 billion last year, even though each one costs 3.7 cents to produce. The price tag for the billions of pennies minted in the last year alone was more than $85 million. One potential downside to getting rid of pennies would be an increased reliance on nickels, which are even more economically inefficient. It costs nearly 14 cents to produce a nickel. Although Congress authorizes U.S. mint coin production, telling Secretary of the Treasury Scott Bessent to halt penny production isn't completely out of left field. For an article for the New York Times Magazine last year, reporter Katie Weaver spoke to an expert in the constitutional law of money from Harvard University who said, there's nothing in here that indicates the secretary has to issue pennies. That assertion, though, has yet to be tested or validated by either Congress or the court system. There's actually precedent for that. In 2020, the UK's Royal Mint said it would stop producing 2p coins for a decade because there was an overabundance of them. The coins remain in circulation and are recognized as legal tender. But this doesn't mean getting rid of U.S. pennies would be easy. Lawmakers have tried before. In 2006, when the price of zinc, the primary metal in pennies, hit a record high, an Arizona congressman proposed a system of rounding for transactions that would render the penny irrelevant. A decade later, two other lawmakers, also from Arizona, where the biggest copper mine in the country is located, introduced a bill to stop the production of pennies. These bills were never taken up by Congress. What happened when other countries eliminated their 1 cent coins? In short, not much. Countries that have eliminated low denomination coins have saved the cost of minting the currency, and cash transactions are rounded up or down in 5 cent increments. If anything, countries that have eliminated the lowest value denominations of currency often implement subsequent changes to phase out the next smallest increment. In other words, watch your back, nickel. In Australia took 1 and 2 cent coins out of circulation in 1992. More recently, there was a push to get rid of the 5 cent coin as well, meaning that every transaction would be rounded to the nearest 10 cents. That effort didn't succeed, but in 2020, the head of the country's national mint predicted that 5 and 10 cent coins would eventually meet a graceful death as fewer people use them. And in Canada, when Canada got rid of its penny in 2012, It allowed the coins to remain in circulation and legal tender, but encouraged merchants to round monetary amounts to the nearest 5-cent increment and implemented a consumer education program so shoppers would become accustomed to the idea. Today, the practice of rounding up or down to the nearest 5-cent increment when paying with cash has become as ordinary to Canadians as being a fan of ice hockey. And New Zealand eliminated 1- and 2-cent coins in 1990 and then took things a step further in 2006 with the elimination of its 5-cent coin. Researchers found that prices actually went down instead of up. One government official suggested that market competition was enough to keep retailers from trying to game the system. And Sweden was an early adopter of the trend. It stopped production of its lowest denominator coins, the 1 ORE and 2 ORE, back in 1972. ORE was 1/100th of a krona, the country's primary unit of currency. In subsequent years, Sweden gradually eliminated other coins smaller than a 1 krona denomination. And making heads or tails of the question, most of the arguments for keeping pennies are arguments against phasing out cash transactions in general, which some advocates say is detrimental to low-income people who don't have bank accounts. The use of cash has been declining for years, though. It accelerated during the pandemic as more people switched to contactless forms of payment. About 18% of transactions were cash-based as of 2022, according to the Boston Fed. If the U.S. did decide to scrap the penny, officials would have to decide how to treat those coins going forward. Some countries that have eliminated their version of the penny simply stop minting the coins, but let the ones already produced remain in circulation. Other countries stop making them legal tender after giving people a period of time to turn in their coins. In most places that have eliminated small denomination coins, cash transactions are rounded to the nearest 5-cent increment. Cashless transactions are still calculated to the cent. Some people in favor of keeping pennies argue that consumers would lose out because all of the prices that currently end in 9 would be rounded up by a penny. A 2007 study dispelled that concern. Wake Forest University economics professor Robert Wapples found that the odds of rounding up or rounding down are about as even as, well, a coin toss. And here's an article. Americans are stressed about inflation. New data says they should be. A key inflation report came in hotter than expected on Wednesday, adding strength to the narrative that inflation is going to remain sticky and could worsen in the future if President Trump makes good on his threats to launch a multi-front trade war. The Consumer Price Index, or CPI, for January came in at 0.5% from a month ago, compared to 0.4% in December. On a year-over-year basis, this brings inflation to 3%, compared to December's 2.9% reading. So-called core inflation, which backs out volatile food and energy prices, came in at 3.3% versus a year ago, compared to 3.2% reading for December. Dylan Bell, Chief Investment Officer of CalBay Investment, says it's likely that current inflation data reflects, in part, a common corporate practice of raising prices at the start of a calendar year. If tariffs do drive up prices, that would likely be reflected later, he adds. It's so early, he says, pointing out that Trump's tactic of using tariffs as a negotiating ploy makes it hard to assess when and how their impact might be felt. We'd have to let that play out for at least a couple of months, he notes, adding that manufacturing and energy would likely be the first sectors where evidence of tariff-induced inflation might surface. The January CPI data is yet another signal that the Federal Reserve's fight against inflation is far from over, and other research indicates that the protracted nature of this battle is weighing more heavily on the minds and wallets of ordinary Americans, especially as fears mount about the potential for Trump's policy to inflame prices. Surveys suggest Americans are worried about the economy. According to the most recent readings from the University of Michigan's survey of consumers, consumer sentiment is flagging. American perceptions of both current as well as future economic conditions are lower than they were a month ago and down more sharply compared with a year ago. People's expectations about their own personal finances have hit a low last seen in October of 2023. While viewpoints about the direction of the economy tend to be influenced by people's political leanings, these recent expressions of pessimism cut across generational, financial, and ideological lines. These findings are echoed by other surveys. Morning Consult found that consumer confidence, which has been buoyant since the election, took a U-turn in January. The Confidence Board flagship Consumer Confidence Index also found that Americans aren't feeling great about the economy, with an assessment of current economic conditions plunging by nearly 10 points in January. Expectations for economic conditions in the future dropped as well. Most alarming, inflation expectations climbed, with a slim majority of people now expecting interest rates to rise over the next year. Americans are worried about the prospect of inflation not just lingering, but potentially escalating if President Trump makes good on his threats to implement widespread tariffs, curtail immigration, and carry out mass deportations. The University of Michigan survey results show just how drastically Americans' outlook has changed. Inflation expectations for the next year leaped a full percentage point, up to 4.3%. Researchers noted that an increase of this scope has happened only four other times since the survey began tracking it 14 years ago. In addition, survey respondents now believe that long-term inflation will run at 3.3%, the highest that expectation has been since June of 2008, shortly before the 2008 financial crisis. According to economists, there's good reason to be worried. The tariffs and radical changes in immigration policy suggested by Mr. Trump might yet prevent the Fed from meeting its inflation target. Oliver Allen, senior U.S. economist at Pantheon Macroeconomics, warned in a research note, "This widespread belief that the inflation picture won't improve anytime soon sets up a dynamic that's potentially worse than just short-term gloom. Fear of higher inflation can trigger a self-fulfilling prophecy economists call a wage-price spiral. In a nutshell, when people expect prices to rise, they put pressure on employers to pay them more. Employers, in turn, raise wages, but also hike prices, bringing about the outcome workers initially feared." Josh Hurt, senior U.S. economist at Vanguard, says via email that policymakers have the task of monitoring the extent to which American workers, consumers, and business people think inflation is going to stick around, and then trying to keep an economically feedback loop from becoming entrenched. Inflation expectations will be important to monitor going forward, as they could signal consumer expectations for sticky inflation and influence how the Fed could proceed with policy, he says. And let's see, next article here, home prices are back on the rise, even in affordable cities. If it seems like bargains in housing are getting harder to find, you're not wrong. Even affordable places to live got pricier at the end of 2024. According to a report out on Tuesday from Redfin, home prices in every single one of the biggest 50 cities in the U.S. rose in December from a year earlier. The last time the housing market experienced this much of a broad-based surge was in May of 2022, when the Federal Reserve had just started to raise interest rates from their pandemic-era lows, and buyers were anxious to lock in purchases before mortgage rates rose further. Redfin notes that some of the biggest year-over-year jumps occurred in places that had managed to avoid the worst of the price increases that have frustrated would-be buyers in recent years. Places that have long been known as affordable places to live, like Cleveland and Milwaukee, are now seeing double-digit price increases, and that's after home prices skyrocketed during the pandemic, Redfin senior economist Elijah Della Campa said in a news release. In Cleveland, for instance, home prices shot up by 15% from a year ago. The increase was nearly the same in Milwaukee, where prices rose by 14.5%. What's more, even places that had seen price increases easing thanks to an influx of new supply have reversed that momentum as well. Redfin's data finds that as recently as April of 2023, the Federal Reserve's anti-inflation campaign of interest rate hikes had succeeded in cooling the rise in home prices. In that month, only 19 of the top 50 metro areas saw year-over-year home price increases. But since then, Americans have largely adjusted to the impact of higher interest rates and continued to spend. And we are going to have to edit this article today because we're out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. Thank you for joining us, and until next time, this is Larry Wilson. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving our community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please give us a call, 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks again for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.